Okay, so to continue, last week I just, if there's anybody new here, it's fine. We'll be able to continue from last week. Last week I gave a kind of a general introduction to where Maimonides has come from, coming from, his culture, the environment, a little bit of biographical material. And today I'm going to get into the actual material. As I sent to Rabbi Kelman, kind of the topic of today's lecture will be, I think, the philosophical, the halachic obligation to study philosophy. That is what I'm going to try and put to rest here today among this small group, though we'll never put to rest this issue, is that Maimonides not only felt that secular sciences, and this is a problematic, that is, when we use terms, and I was talking to Bill Weiss here before, we use terms and we bandy about terms that have changed over the ages. So when you use a phrase like, let's say, you use the distinction between secularism and religion, this was really not a useful distinction in the Middle Ages, certainly not in the ancient Near East, not in the Middle Ages, and not until really the Enlightenment. That is, we tend to see the world distinguished between religious people and secular people, or between secularism and religion. The ancients certainly did not, and the medievals also didn't. That is, everybody was religious to some extent. There was no such thing, really. I mean, there were guys, I suppose, that would act there and conduct their lives as if there were no God, but there was no such thing as atheism or secularism per se. So we have to always bear this in mind. That when we talk about, you know, whether the Rambam, learned secular sciences or went outside the Torah, this is a grand misconception. It's not even correct to talk about the Rambam this way, or any of the medievals, any of the Arabic philosophers, any of the Christian philosophers, any of the Jewish philosophers. They saw the world holistically, and always in terms of religion, always in terms of God. So if there is any bifurcation between the secular and the religious, it's always that there is some kind of inconsistency, or between what my logic tells me and what religion tells me, or my fundamental texts tell me. And therefore, it doesn't mean I reject one or the other, but it means that I have to find some kind of harmonization. So this is very, very important, because people make this mistake. So I'll just give you an example. And today, like I said, today's topic will be, and maybe for the rest of the classes, what I see as Maimonides, not just it's nice to study sciences, it's nice to go to university, it's nice to get a profession, but it is in fact a halachic obligation to study sciences, or what is what we consider to be outside of Torah, but what Maimonides considered to be part of Torah. That is, under the rubric of Torah came all truth. Truth is Torah. And truth encompasses everything that leads to the truth. Anything that leads you to a greater understanding about the world leads you ipso facto to a greater understanding about God. And therefore, if that leads me to a greater understanding about God, it makes me a more religious person, and therefore not just a religious person, but a more perfected Jew. That's the equation. That's the equation. So so to give you an example, I was on a program once with a religious guy, a Hasidic guy, a nice guy, and he was telling me, we were talking beforehand, and he says, I know why the Rambam, he says, oh yeah, you're into the Rambam. I know why the Rambam studied philosophy. So right away I knew there was already, he's along the wrong path, because the Rambam studied philosophy, but he studied Torah. And I'll try to show that today. So he says to me that he studied philosophy because, his brother died. This is true, and his younger brother, who supported the family, this is also true. His brother was a merchant, and when his brother died, he decided he needed a job. So therefore, he went to the University of Cairo, to the Department of Philosophy, which I think is already problematic. And he studied philosophy so he could earn a living. Okay. So there are bits and pieces. So stories have some truth. You know, Rashi says with dreams, especially like with Yosef and his dreams, there's no dream that, you know, every dream, in order to be sustainable, has a bit of truth in it, mixed up with some myth. This is always the case with, especially with somebody like the Rambam, or kind of mythical figures that we idolize and we've kind of iconified. It is true that the impetus for him becoming kind of a doctor or adopting a profession was his brother's death. That is true. But he adopted a profession, the medical profession, not University of Cairo to study philosophy. But I told him like this. I said, you know, you've gained something, but you've lost something much, much more important. That is, in your mind, you have a problem which the Rambam did not have. So you have a fictitious problem that the modern has. That is, you have this distinction between the secular, between science and Torah, which the Rambam didn't have. So he didn't need your rationalization to go and learn philosophy. And I'll explain what philosophy means, by the way. That's also different in the Middle Ages than it was than it is in modern times. So you have a problem he didn't have. But compounding the problem is you've saved your own ideology and completely sacrificed the Rambam. Because what you've done is you've basically said he's really a member of the oldest profession in the world. That is, he really went into something he didn't quite believe, because that's how you rationalize it, because they're two distinct domains, to make a living. So I said, isn't it better, isn't it better to say that the Rambam truly believed in this? He believed that this was a pursuit that was worthwhile, and then apply your own, you know, your own kind of ideology and say he was mistaken. You know what? He was mistaken. Isn't that a better way? You haven't given up the Rambam. He lived in a time, and certainly we have a lot of controversy around the Rambam by men much greater than you. That understood perfectly well what he said, like the Ramban, for instance, most prominent of all, who didn't use this rationalization, who said, I understand perfectly well what the Rambam says, and it's terrible. So let's take a Rishon, like the Ramban, who read the Rambam very carefully and understood the Rambam, and did battle with him. That I can understand. Do battle with him, right? But don't always try to harmonize him with whatever you believe in. So he used all kinds of distinctions that are really not helpful and not relevant, because he doesn't understand where the Rambam is coming from. So I want to leave that anecdote and then try and show how that anecdote is somehow that I have had a basis to kind of convey that anecdote. So we were talking about last week, and what I want to do in that handout, if everybody has that handout from last week, is just go to the second source that I have, which is what the Rambam begins, and don't forget, the Mishneh Torah is a code of law. Yet the first book in the Mishneh Torah is called Sefer Mada. And as I was explaining to Bill, even the term Mada, so Mada, we all know, what would you translate it as? Science. Okay, so this is science. The reason you say science is because of the modern connotation of the word Mada. That is, if you go to university in Israel, if you go to Hebrew University, you'll find every department is described by Mada. That is, if you go to Jewish Studies Department, you'll go to the Madei Yadut. Science Department, or Humanities, Madei HaRuach. Right, but where you get that in faculties, not facultas, is they use faculty, but you're studying the science of Judaism, or the right. So Mada science is where you get science from is a modern really term. So somewhat correct, not entirely. Anybody? Exactly. Okay. So this is the most common definition of the term or translation, and you often see it, Book of Knowledge. Okay, but that is Book of Knowledge. one could say that the entire code should be called Book of Knowledge. I mean, he's giving us halakhot that I should know, right? So what's special about this book as opposed to Moed, or Shoftim, or Mishpatim, or Torts, right? These are also things I should know, right? Also something that gives me knowledge. So knowledge can't be quite correct either. So this is a term, just to give you an example, when we talk, you know, from a modern perspective, that it's not quite right to say science, it's not quite right to say knowledge, because these things don't capture what the Rambam is trying to capture. I recently read a 60-page article just on the term Mada by one of the most kind of prominent scholars who doesn't write much, but he's known as a great scholar in Harvard, Bernard Septimus, on the term Mada. And at the end of the day, my head was spinning, and I really had no idea what Mada was. He went through, but one of the things that is important to remember is that what he was dealing with mainly as a philologist and who has knowledge, great facility with languages and knowledge of medieval Arabic, is that the Rambam translated Mada from an Arabic term. Which Arabic term is it? Is it this term ilm, or is it term chikmah? Which chikmah you can already understand. Chachma, of course, they're cognate languages, they're Semitic languages. So the whole article is, what does he mean? Here he means this, here he means that. I don't know what the heck he means, right? So at the end of the day, I don't know what he means. But that's one thing to bear in mind. That is, when he uses these terms, even when he is talking in Hebrew, that is the Mishneh Torah, which was written in Hebrew, and assumedly, or allegedly in Mishnaic Hebrew, this is not totally Mishnaic Hebrew, he's already probably translating terms from the Arabic that try to capture something that he can't quite capture in Hebrew. So at the end of the day, what I did was I went to the Tanakh and I said, okay, and he mentions it in the article too, but he doesn't really spend much time in it. But I thought, this is actually pretty good. You don't have to go much further than the Tanakh. Mada is a rare term. In fact, it's rare even in the Rambam's own corpus of material. It's only used six times in the entire Mishneh Torah. Three of them in Sefer Mada, only three times does he use it, and three times elsewhere. And in the Tanakh, it's only used three or four times. But one or two of them I found very interesting. And I think this, really, to me, I don't want to get in, you know, here it's, we could spend the next 6 weeks talking just on this article. But the most interesting source, and remember this only occurs very, very rarely, is in Daniel. And in Daniel, which is, you'll always find, okay, Daniel before Ezra and Nehemiah, towards the end of the Tanakh, is the following. When Nebuchadnezzar brings people back, the exiles back, he says to his you know, underlings, Lahavim im deisho mizeram lucha min hapartamin, Yiladim, he wants to bring Yiladim, young people, Asher ein behem kol u'um betovei mareh, handsome people, umaskilim, now listen to this, okay, so I think this gives you a very, very good idea about what the Rambam was talking about. Umaskilim bechol chachma v'yodei da'at u'mevinei mada v'asher koach bahem lamod behechal hamelach ulelamdam sefer uleshon kastim. I think that's, I don't know if you have to go much further than that. That is, here clearly he's not telling him, bring me young people, young yeshiva bocherim, who, right, are Bekiyim and Bishas, okay? I want these young people to serve in the court of the king, who are well-versed in chachma, in mada, in languages. And then again, in verse 14, this is Daniel. Daniel Perek Aleph. In verse 17, Vahayaladim Aela, and one of them is of course Daniel, and he gives them English names, gives them Babylonian names. They have Babylonians because they're going to serve in the court of the king. Maimonides served in the court of Saladin. Interesting. Vayiladim ha'ela arba'atam, four of them. Natan lahem ha'elokim mada. He gave him mada. V'haskel, now this is important, I think, and I don't think I have to go any further. V'chol sefer v'chachma v'daniel hevin v'chol chazon v'chalamot. Anyways, here you have mada in the context of the king's court, in the context of a king drafting people who will be well-versed in virtually all the wisdom of the day. Every book that was around, all the languages. So I'm not sure you have to go any further than that. I think the Rambam used it in that sense. Yeah.
I mean, not that it's a contradiction, but I would assume that Mada is also a distinct knowledge of God. But that's what the book, in other words, it is a book of knowledge, but knowledge of God as distinct from knowledge of other halakhot, because that's how we start this book.
Right.
Even though with all the halakhot that he discusses in Mada, being a Navi,
right.
and even learning Torah, are related to that concept.
Right, right. That's very good. And that's what I wanted to get to. That is, that this ties in directly to the very first mitzvah. That is, without knowing this, you can't possibly accomplish the knowledge of God. So what the Rambam has done with Mada, and with the use of, by the way, the term Chachma, various times, is that Chachma, for instance, in the Tanakh, and in kind of Jewish tradition, can mean various things. And this is the beauty of the Rambam. That is, the Rambam uses terms that can mean various things because he's often very wary of the different audiences that will get their hands on his material. He's wary of people's abilities, of people's facility, of different levels of understanding. And the beauty of the Rambam is that he writes that way, and he says this explicitly a number of times, so that he uses terms very carefully to capture a number of things that different people can take the way they want to take. So you're absolutely correct that knowledge ultimately will lead to the accomplishment of mitzvot. But how that knowledge leads to that mitzvah and what that knowledge entails is what I'm getting at here. That is, without this concept of mada, you cannot fulfill the primary mitzvah. Forget about putting on tefillin, right? Forget about keeping Shabbos. Forget about eating kosher. That is the very primary mitzvah that all of Judaism stands and falls on. You cannot accomplish without understanding what mada is.
What do you say, just as you're saying that mada is a necessary condition for the mitzvot, how would he see someone who had mada but no mitzvot? It's not a sufficient condition.
Okay, you know what, it's probably going to launch me on a long, long discussion. So let's put that aside, and it's a good question, but let's first go through the sources, and then hopefully remind me again, and I'll come back to it. By the way, the other, I think, main source of mada is Shlomo Melech in the beginning of Divrei Yomim. In Perek Aleph, Shlomo Melech, when he's kind of praying to God, says, this is the first parak of Divrei Yamin Beit, Second Chronicles. He says, "Ata chachma umada tainli," right? He's asking God, and everybody knows Solomon was known for wisdom, right? Give me mada v'haskel. Chachma umada ve'etza lefneim azev aboa. Anybody who knows Tanakh knows latzeit v'lavo means is a technical term, is a terminus technicus for leading people into battle. We know, for instance, if you look at Shmuel 8, the main motivation for the people asking for a king was latzeit v'lavo, and this is often used. You can look at the with David, he's loved by the people because he's an expert he's an expert military commander. That's what it means. That's what it means. There's nothing to talk about. Okay, that's what Latzeit V'Lavo means in Tanakh. So he's asking for that kind of mada. I'm not sure. Maybe he uses. I know primarily in Shmuel it's used. especially when they ask for a king. But you might be. It might be.
But Shlomo didn't need it, right?
Well, Shlomo was asking for it. There's always, let's not forget God in the picture. Okay, God helps people to do things. So God is also in the picture. So so he says, Ki mi yishpat et amcha hazeh agadol. Okay, this is also, I don't want to get too wrapped up in here. Also, the word shofet does not mean necessarily, I just want to always hammer away at the importance of terms. That is, we use, when somebody today says shofet, of course, okay, so there it is.
Like totally fits in, but
that's right, because Yeshua is going into the conquest of Canaan, that's what it means. And if you look everywhere, that's what it means. He's not asking for halachic ability, if we can use anachronistically with biblical figures, but even shofet, for instance, shofet does not mean the book of Shoftim. I defy any one of you who's read the book of Shoftim to give me one instance of any of the Shoftim that sit there on a court. She's a Shofetet. But what does she do? Primarily? War. Every single one of them. What happens is the people are confronted by an enemy. You need somebody who is a Shofet. It's very, very, it's misconceiving to translate that word as a judge. None of these people judge in the sense that we know judge, what we know judge to mean. What judge mean here goes exactly along with, let's say, falavo. It means to lead the people. Okay, it could mean, in addition, if you want to say that there's no redundancy in Torah, it means lead the people into military battle, and politics. That is, Shlomo was asking for guidance in governance, in political, geostrategical abilities. Whatever the case, it's not a class in Tanakh. Whatever the case is, for me, it's enough in Tanakh, for the rare instance of Mada, that the Rambam may have imported this sense. Mada is something that includes those subjects that are rooted in the things, the field that needs this kind of all-embracive study. Okay, that's my argument here. So you may ask me the question, there are things in this book, Sefer HaMada, for those of you who know, right, that, okay, we have Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah. That's kind of easy. But we have other things in Sefer HaMada, Hilchot Avodat Zarah. We have, maybe that's not so problematic, but we have Hilchot Talmud Torah. Okay, so leave that aside for a minute. So how do those things fit in? Remember, the whole project of codification of the law is already a philosophical project. The whole enterprise of classifying things so that they fit in is already somebody who's looking at the Gemara and not just thinking about scattered halachot, but thinking conceptually. How am I going to fit these halachot? Where are they going to go? This is not just a legal project, but a very, very highly conceptualized project. And to this day, debates go on as to why he put things into certain places. That's Mada. That's Mada. I think that's enough. I'm not going to go into the guy's 50-page, 60-page article. When I was talking to another scholar who knows this guy, there's a Yale University has had a project of translating the various volumes of the Mishneh Torah. So they put out quite a few of them over the years, since I think the 60s maybe. One still hasn't been put out, which this great scholar was his project, which is Sefer Mada. Sefer Mada hasn't been put out yet. The guy wrote an article, 60 pages, just on the term Mada. So you can imagine that every term, right? So I was talking to another great scholar who says, yeah, you know, he comes into my office and we discuss this thing he tells me a word, and he says, for 3 hours we discussed this thing. And this particular scholar happened to be Sephardic, and he told me, you know what, he's a constipated Ashkenazi. What can I say, right? So, the man is a very, very great scholar, but, you know, you have to make a decision sooner or later as to what a term means. I had my own experience with him. I gave a talk in Israel at the 850th anniversary of the Rambam's death, and And I gave this whole thing on something in Mishnah Torah. It was like, I worked on it for months and months. And then he comes up to me at the end and very cryptically says, you know, if you look at the word, this is a long piece of the Rambam, if you look at the word miyad, I think your whole thesis is going to fall apart. So I go, oh God, so I spent the next 3 months trying to figure out what this meant. To this day, I still haven't exactly figured it out. But this is what scholars do. So, sometimes they go a little bit, I think, maybe too far, but we need them to, yeah. No, there's no index. However, I suppose there's no index with pages, and there's no standard edition. But so an index wouldn't really be useful, right? And no index would be useful before the printing press, certainly. So you don't have the printing press yet. However, the Sefer HaMitzvot, right, is very the Book of Commandments, where he lists the 613 commandments. Is in a sense kind of an introduction, and a kind of an all-encompassing, maybe you can call it an index, so that one, whenever one looks and at the beginning of every book and every section in the Mishnah Torah, he starts off with a heading where he lists the mitzvot, which in some cases is actually a little bit different than the Sefer Mitzvot, but that kind of is an index, I suppose, a table of contents, not really an index. So there's no index.
If you, in theory, had an index, the ordering or where things are put is not quite as important.
You can find it, but that's not really the important question. The important question is conceptually. The important question is not where to find it. That could be easy. Now with the CD-ROM today, I can find lots of things. So I'm not so smart when I mention things. Sometimes I look at the Bar-Ilan CD-ROM. It's not a big problem today. Right. But conceptually, why? Why is, let's say, Hilchot Talmud Torah in where it is? Why is the Hilchot of conversion where it is? The very positioning of halacha already tells you something about what he thinks about that category.
It will have no impact on the observance.
No, but that's exactly maybe the point of my talk, is that that it may not have any impact on the observance, but it has a great impact on what the Rambam thought was the most important thing, which is the conception behind the observance. So that's important. That's a good question, because at the end of the day, some people, what's the difference? Halacha is halacha. I do it this way. But I would say that halacha and mitzvot are really meaningless for the Rambam unless you really understand what conceptually underlies the mitzvah.
Not only the Rambam.
Not only the Rambam, mitzvot.
The involved in the whole notion of korbanot,
Right, and the debate of mitzvot tzrichot kavana.
Right.
But in some cases, the guys who hold it, mitzvot eino tzrichot kavana, so you could. You could conceivably. Ainan tzricha kavana. That's right. Ultimately, that's the halacha. So theoretically, right? Theoretically.
But conceptually, if you want another.
Conceptually,
a mitzvah may have an independent value, but everybody agrees that the much more important is what's.
I'm not sure. Theoretically, you could be a perfectly good Jew, I suppose, and just mindlessly do the mitzvot. Right, I suppose. Let me actually put out something even more, maybe startling. So let's go to the in that first handout that I gave you. I don't know if everybody, you have the first handout I gave you. Yeah, the first one.
I know my relatives don't.
So if you go to that first handout. So this is what I want. So this is a code of law, right? He starts off the very beginning of his code of law. Yesod ha-yesodot va'amud ha-chachmot leida shiyesham matsui rishon. To know, and we talked about this word to know, it means to know, and here's where your question comes in, Rabbi Kelman, about, that's right, knowledge of God. Vehu mamsi kol nimtza, he Okay, this is hard to translate a little bit. He brings out everything that is in existence. V'chol ha-nimtza'im, everything that is in existence. Mishamayim va'aretz u'mashe b'neihem, from the heavens and the earth and whatever is between them. Lo nimtzu, do not exist. Ela me'amitat himatz'o, except in virtue of the truth of his existence. Let me tell you that without a background in Aristotle and Greek philosophy, this is total gobbledygook. The very first law, I don't know if you call it a law, but it is a law, in the Mishnah Torah, which every yeshiva bucha knows and everybody knows, nobody really knows. What does it mean to know that there is a notice? You may notice something very peculiar here. He doesn't say Leda Sheyesh Hashem Ba'olam. He does not say that. He says Leda Sheyesham Matsui Rishon.
First cause.
A first cause. I don't know if any of you have, are familiar with Aristotelian philosophy. First cause. V'chol ha-nimtza'im ma'ashibinim lo numtzu'u ela me'amitat hi matzo. Nothing exists except because of the truth of his existence. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Existentialist.
I'm not sure it means existentialist. Maybe we can, you know, everybody, like I said in the beginning, everybody uses the Rambam for what they want to use him. But I'm not sure the Rambam here was akin to modern existentialism. But the world exists because of the truth of his existence. Okay. We're not going to talk about that in this class. However, this every term here requires a background knowledge in Mada. So let's go to the practical consequence of this Leda, because notice he doesn't yet say that this is something that's an obligation, so to speak. He said Yisodei Sodot v'Amud HaChokmot, which maybe is more important for the Rambam than a halachic obligation, but it's something that undergirds the entire Jewish religion. The entire Jewish religion is, the basis is rooted in this statement. And then it takes shape as actually a halachic obligation. To know this thing, HaMitzvah HaRishona, so to go to the next source, He had tivui. So now the first commandment, this is after all, is a book of law. Asher tivanu lahaamin, and again, the word lahaamin is a difficult word. What he's actually means by this probably does not mean, to me most certainly, although I know there will be debates about this, most certainly doesn't mean emunah in the modern sense of emunah. He's probably already translating a Arabic term for emunah. The word for emunah here can be the word that is translated the word for emunah here is can be leida also, but we'll leave that aside. V'hu shenamin shiesham ila v'siba, again, not God, that there is a cause, ila v'siba. Ila is a medieval term. Or at least the medievals use this term, a very technical term, for Aristotelian cause and effect. That is, one of the primary proofs for the existence of God is the proof, what's called from infinite regress. That is, if you use the Aristotelian, and by the way, this is all, everything that the Rambam bases himself on is outdated science. But that doesn't mean, not everything, science has obviously moved on from Aristotle. But that doesn't mean that the basic principles that govern Maimonides' perspective on things is wrong. That is, we know now that Aristotelian science is wrong. But Aristotle held sway for quite a long time. Now, technology now, if an idea holds sway for longer than a day, it's a good idea. But Aristotle, who died, I don't know, 4th century BCE, like around at the end of the 300s BCE, his ideas held sway until for about 1.5 millennia or more. Well, till Spinoza, and primarily in science, Galileo and Copernicus. So, and they refused him, and Galileo spent the time in prison because the Vatican refused to give up Aristotle. But the power of his ideas, the basic principles that I have to demonstrate things using logic and empiricism, those ideas, the general scientific method, so to speak, still holds today. And that's what the Ramam subscribe to. So when he uses Ilavasiba, he's referring to this proof that Aristotle used, which was that, you know, cause and effect. There everything has a cause. And I'm kind of caricaturing here, an effect. So, but if you trace cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect, you have to come back to some origin, right? That is, the series of cause and effects that end up to where I am here, right, has to end up, it wasn't conceivable in the medieval mind or in the Aristotelian mind to not to start off with the beginning. So therefore he comes to a first cause with a capital FC. Right? That's not the Rambam's God. maybe. But I don't think it is. But for all intents and purposes, here it is. So there is a first cause. He's the one that governs everything that is in existence. And where is the root of this? What's the source of this commandment? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then he cites the Gemara about Taryag Mitzvot. By the way, I don't want to get into this too much either, because this could, sometimes I go off into tangents. Taryag Mitzvot, which has become so sanctified almost in Judaism, in the beginning was really simply a mnemonic. It was just something in the Gemara that came up, kind of a not a halachic category, a kind of casual, I would say, statement in order to remember approximately maybe what the Torah encompasses. I'll let you read it there. Torah is the Gematria Taryat, 611. There were two that were heard out of the mouth of God himself that everybody heard. And hopefully I'll get a chance to actually tell you the Rambam's take on that, which is very interesting. However, it's not necessarily sacrosanct. 613 is not sacrosanct, because 613 mitzvot we have debates about. What are they? Can you imagine like a religion that has debates about what we don't even know, right? We don't have a consensus about what the 613 mitzvot, the great taryag mitzvot, are. In fact, the Rambam is the greatest exponent, the greatest debater with what held sway up until that time of what the 613 were. But let's leave that aside for a moment. Here we have a mitzvah. He says it's a mitzvah. The first mitzvah. The most important mitzvah. He starts out with that. It's the first mitzvah in his Sefer Mitzvot. He starts off with the definition of the Yesod, to know the existence of God. To know the existence of God is a definition that is framed in terms of the science of his day. Okay? So, irregardless of whether the science of his day was right or not, that really is not that relevant. What is important is the science of his day. Read the science of our day. Read the philosophy of our day. That is the only possible way, the only possible way you could accomplish this mitzvah is to go to university. There is no other way. I don't see any other way. Or, other than going to university, is to study science and philosophy. Okay, if that's not enough for you, I maybe haven't made out my case yet. Just to give you an idea of this is not necessarily the unanimous view, that is, not everybody holds that Anochi, remember, Anochi. Yeah.
Just on a bit of a side note,
sure.
It seems extremely strange to me that going back to first cause, you would use the Anochi Hashem Elokecha as opposed to Bereshit Bara Elokim, which is back again to the first cause.
Okay. So, good question. So, Breshit bara Elokim, there's something that the Torah starts with that the Torah already assumes. And that's what he's dealing with here. That even goes back before Breshit. Okay? That's right. Breshit deals with creation. But Breshit introduces you to a figure. All of a sudden, there's God. You know, this is very interesting about the Torah, as opposed sometimes actually to other ancient Near Eastern literature that introduce you to who the gods are. Who the gods are, where they came from, where they were born from. This starts with a given. There's God. We don't know who he is. We don't know what he is. In fact, even in rabbinic tradition, in the Midrash, the name changes in the account of the creation from Elohim to Elokim and Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei later on, combined names. And the tradition understands there's a problem here. What is this change? Is he Elohim? Is he Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei? They're both the same. They're for one. We go off. We go off. Well, Jewish God, you mean Anochi. You mean Anochi. Okay. All right. Okay. Good question. Okay. So, don't forget, what he's talking about here is a mitzvah. Mitzvot only apply to Jews. Right? Goyim are not obligated by mitzvot. Goyim can become perfectly good people and perfect people, according to the Rambam, in every sense of the word, and get their place in Olam Haba in every sense of the word, except in terms of functioning legal system, they're not bound by the mitzvot. So don't forget, this is a code. But what he starts with is a general universal. That's why he starts, I think, your question is a good question. That is, Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachmot, that's has no ethnic or religiously based tone. This is a universal principle. The foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdom. This is not a Jewish concept, right? Is to know this thing. Now, I'm, after all, writing for Jews. I'm not writing for Muslims and I'm not writing for Christians. Now I get into the more parochial, which is a mitzvah. Okay, so I got a mitzvah. You're right. But I got a mitzvah. But he's not proving the mitzvah from Anochi. That, don't forget, this is a very important distinction. He's providing a proof text. A proof text for a halakha. For a mitzvah.
For him, it sounds like it would be almost anathema to prove a metaphysical concept from the Torah. Is it? I don't know.
Okay, not anathema, but again, the distinction is, this is the source for the mitzvah. It's not the proof. It's a statement. It's a conclusion. It's an assertion. It's a proposition, whatever you want to call it. But it's not the proof. The proof is contained in the technical terms that he uses in the first and here that will, for those who know, right, will lead them back. His real students, let's say his student Joseph, will read this and say, I know what the Rambam means. I studied with him for years, right? We looked at Aristotle, we looked at Al-Farabi, we looked at Avicenna, we looked at all the Arabic classes. I know exactly what he means. And this is what I meant by when I talked originally about the different audiences. He's very careful. For those who are not familiar, this is also not bad. It's not bad. Okay, to know, first, right? It sounds fine to me. But for the ones who have gone a little bit further in their studies, know exactly what he means. So Anochi is just a source, a proof text, not the proof. So in order to accomplish the mitzvah of Anochi, that's what I'm trying to get at. I cannot possibly, remember, this is not some stump, some you know, like nice advice, you know. Not only is it nice, not nice, just advice or good counsel. This is the primary mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. It's a halachic obligation. Not just a halachic obligation, but the halachic obligation that undergirds the entire halachic system.